It's nice to see a good company here for the meeting, and we make you all very welcome. And I can assure you that I'm very happy to be here and to share the meeting with my good brother, Mr. McPhee. I have a brief reading from the Old Testament, the first book of Samuel, and in chapter 2. The first book of Samuel, and in chapter 2. And commencing to read at verse 1. And Hannah prayed and said, "My heart rejoiceth in the Lord. Mine horn is exalted in the Lord. My mouth is enlarged over mine enemies, because I rejoice in thy salvation. There is none holy as the Lord, for there is none beside thee, neither is there any rock like our God. Talk no more so exceeding proudly. Let not arrogancy come out of your mouth, for the Lord is a God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed." It would be interesting to continue that reading. I leave you to do that when you have a few minutes. The woman mentioned in the book of Kings is called a great woman. Now, these words are not used of Hannah, but I'm quite sure that all of us would feel satisfied that Hannah was a great and a good woman. And I don't know that any of us could assess the value of good women either in the home or in the assembly. Hannah, a great woman. So great that we have her husband's name in the Bible. In all likelihood, if it hadn't been for Hannah, his name would not have appeared. So great was she that she actually changed the course of the nation of Israel. Her son Samuel was used of God to do that. We would see that she was great in prayer. She was great in practice. She was great in praise. And she was great in prophecy. Maybe some of you didn't think that Hannah was amongst those who prophesied. If you continue to read in this chapter, you would find that she was a great woman in the home and in the nation. But I want you to notice that though she was so good and great, she was a woman who suffered adversity. You know, being right with God and pleasing him and walking in his way does not guarantee us immunity from trouble and difficulty. Many of the choices of God's saints have suffered adversity. Joseph suffered it at home from his brethren and later from the world. Moses, likely the greatest leader that Israel ever had. They broke his heart for nearly 40 years. And the strange thing is, when he died, they mourned about him for 30 days. It would at least teach me this. We'd be better to appreciate good people when we have them and do less mourning about them when they go to heaven. Job suffered adversity from Satan. And Paul the Apostle suffered adversity even from the very people that he had seen saved and the assemblies that he had seen fall. Wasn't it Godly Rutherford who said, "Deep waters cross life's pathway. The hedge of thorn was sharp." Many a dear ship suffers adversity. But isn't it nice to notice that Rutherford could continue to sing? And brethren, we'll soon all be able to sing. He said, "Now these all lie behind me. And oh, for a well-tuned heart." The days of adversity may be trying and dark and difficult, but they can't be long at the most. Heaven and home, the Savior, and eternal glory awaits us. But Hannah suffered adversity, and she felt it. And people do feel adversity. But it's interesting to notice we don't discover at all that Hannah in any way retaliated or sought to get her own back. Her name means grace, and she lived up to it. She left her days of adversity in the hand of a wise God. And as we see in minutes, he attended to that, and he dried her tears and filled her mind and heart with joy and praise. She had her days of adversity, but they finished. Secondly, I would want you to notice that she was a woman who had to take a second place. I would take it that she was Elkanah's first wife. And possibly because she had no children, he took a second. And Hannah finds herself being set aside, being pushed into the shadow, given a second place, and sees someone else coming out and getting prominent in praise. I don't need to tell you, it's not easy to experience that. Spurgeon was right when he said, "It takes more grace than I can tell to play the second fiddle well. Most of us could play the first and lead the band. Not too many happy to take a second place." Hannah had to do that. God so arranged it. The early disciples had trouble in this connection. Far be it from me to find fault with such good men as Peter, James, and John. And yet, you remember that they disputed by the way, which of us shall be the greatest? They all wanted to be number one, the leader. You'll allow me to say it, won't you? Very many of our problems amongst brethren and preacher and even sister could be traced to this very thing: place seeking. Place seeking. Now, Hannah had to take a second place. But it's interesting to notice, isn't it, that God attended to that. And we've been reading about her. She said, "Mine horn is exalted in the Lord." Not only has God brought me out of those days of adversity and dried my tears and brought me out of that place of obscurity, but he's brought me to a place of prominence. Mine horn is exalted in the Lord, and some have thought that it may be a reference to a custom that was prevalent amongst Syrian women. They wore a metal horn to suspend their veil, and those who had children wore it in a more perpendicular manner than others. But be that as it may, she rejoiced in the fact that she was exalted. And brethren, as I leave that, it's well for all of us to keep this in mind. Your Bible and mine say, promotion cometh not from the east or from the west, but from the Lord. And I believe if we'd all grace the pen, the little niche that God has for us, and do it with our heart and with all the interest we can, and leave place to God, he would see to it, because he has said, he that humbleth himself shall be exalted. A great woman that had to take a second place. Thirdly, I want you to notice that she was a woman of prayer. And in all likelihood, if my brother were speaking about this, this is the point that they would give most emphasis to. A woman of prayer. And it's many years since I heard one of our most successful evangelists in the north of Ireland, Mr. Joseph Stewart, say that he would rather have one old praying woman than six preaching men. It wasn't that he discouraged preaching men. I know that, for he encouraged me. But as he saw things in the light of the sanctuary, and in the years of his experience, he saw the value of a praying woman. And Hannah was that. Is it any wonder that her son Samuel was such a man of prayer? Someone has said, if we had more Hannah, we might have more Samuels. And you'd agree with me, I know, we certainly would need them. A woman of prayer. Now you will notice that as far as she was concerned, prayer was a deep and real experience. It wasn't a hurried minute or two on her knee in the morning, and a look at the calendar, and a hurried minute or two in the evening, and into bed and away. I know. We noticed that bitter death was associated with our prayer. We noticed that tears were associated with her prayer. We noticed that she continued to pray. And we noticed that she poured out her soul before the Lord. Now, Scripture wouldn't allow a sister to pray in a public meeting like that. You'd all be agreed with that, I'm sure. Bible teaches that. But tell me, friend, whenever did you hear a man pray like that? With tears. And with a sense of continuity. And pouring out his soul before God. Whenever did you hear a man pray like that? I'm not going to encourage you to do that. But mind you, if you did it, some of you might get a big surprise. So might I. If we put our ear to a door for many a sister prays, we might be enlightened. A praying woman. But why did Hannah pray? Well, I want you to notice, first of all, she prayed because of the departure of Israel. unspiritual woman that she was, she could see quite clear the awful sense of the heart that marked the nation.
The book of Judges closes, no king, they did what was right in their own eyes.
A sense of departure. Hannah prayed about that. But I think it is important to notice that we don't read that Hannah talked a whole lot about that. I was telling the other night in Abbotsford about the old woman that sent for her doctor. And he came and examined her very carefully. Nice, friendly young man. And then he sat down beside her to talk. And he said, now, in my opinion, you're suffering from nasal catarrh. And she hadn't a notion in the world what he was talking about. And in her simplicity, she said, doctor, I didn't send for you to prison this thing. I sent for you to cure it. Mind you, it's easy to christen a whole lot of things. And if you'll pardon me for saying, I have noticed in our own land and in Europe, there's far too much talking about the trouble. And maybe not enough praying about it. Easy to get a few folk around the table or around the fire and discuss. And it's all right to a point, because we would have to admit that departure exists. Do you think? What about our private devotion? Are they what they ought to be? Think about our gospel scene. Is it wearing? Think about our pilgrim character. Are we settling down? Think about our separation from the world and our assembly testimony. Oh, there's a good deal of depart. But tell me, are we talking about it or are we praying about it? I put it to you very pointedly tonight. When did you take a few minutes and go aside and wait on God about the drift and the departure? And pray because of the departure of Israel. Secondly, she prayed because of the impiety of the grief. In New Testament language, they should have been spiritual, holy men, leaders. Example. But were they? They were anything but it. And you would notice that at least two things were wrong. One, their motives were wrong. Or listen to them. They come to the Israelites when they're bringing their sacrifices and they say, me first, I want the best of the sacrifice. Their motive was wrong. They weren't thinking about God and His thing. And secondly, their morals were wrong. They had illicit association with the women that gathered around the gate. And couldn't you almost feel as dear Hannah was feeling? Looking across the nation and looking at the leader, the piety, the great, as you did more. She prayed for a third leaf. Yes, she prayed that she might have a little boy. And mind you, if she had prayed just simply to have a little boy to feed and clothe and nurse, not a soul could have said a word. It's God's order. And isn't it lovely to see the mother with a little child on her knee, just the light of her eye and heart. Something lovely about it. But that wasn't why Hannah prayed. Hannah prayed that she might have a man child, that she might give him back to God, and that he might be raised up to stay the tide and lead the people back. In a word, she prayed for the glory of God. Well, I can't stay to enlarge on this, but I want to ask. What about all our public preachers?
What about all our public prayer?
Now, brethren, in all good conscience, have we the glory of God before us? I said to a preacher, I will not tell you where or who, he didn't ask me. After he had prayed at the conference, I knew him pretty well. I said, tell me now, please. Was that prayer intended for heaven or for the congregation? And the priest, he was on. He said, there was a man told me after the meeting, he was glad I prayed that way for a lot of boys there that needed that. Now, my brother, that'll not do. We're handling holy and divine things. When we rise to speak and pray, I'll be God's glory before us. Hannah, she prayed because of the departure of this. She prayed because of the impiety of the priest. She prayed for the glory of God. I'll not be enlarging that in a minute. Is it any wonder God answered her prayer? And there was that I want you to know. She was misunderstood. You know, we would nearly been inclined to think, well, there's a woman, and everybody will think well of her, and everybody prays her, and they say, my, we never had a woman like that before. But isn't it important to notice that Hannah was misunderstood? And misunderstood by a man that should have had discernment and perception, Eli the priest. He misunderstood Hannah. And it is significant to notice. He said she was drunkard and a daughter of Belial. And that's exactly what God said his sons were. And the first time I noticed that, I thought that would make me careful what I would say about other people's family. I need to be fairly sure that my own family were doing all right. Now I know you have to minister God's truth, don't misunderstand it, same time. Hannah charges the woman. She's a daughter of Belial. God says, Hannah, that's what his sons are. Now why did she be misunderstood? Because I believe, first of all, Eli was hasty in his judgment. You know, it doesn't do to be too hasty in your judgment. And secondly, he wasn't properly informed. And if you are going to make a judgment, mind you, you would need to be well informed. And somebody has said there's three sides to every story. There's yours and mine and the right one. Keep that in mind when you're going to pass a judgment. Your old Eli, he was blind. He's away in heart from God. And he misunderstood a godly, praying woman. And I don't think you need me to tell you tonight, many a sister has been misunderstood. Oh, she went over to the meeting with her head in the air and she never looked at me. Did it ever occur to you that she might have had a burden on her heart that you knew nothing about and she wasn't thinking about you at all? Many a brother. Oh, but he said it. Are you sure he said it? Did you go and ask him? Many a preacher has been misunderstood, and many an assembly has been misunderstood. Hannah was misunderstood. But quickly, let me draw attention to this. Her God attended to her adversity and dried her teeth, and attended to her position and brought her out and exalted her, and answered her prayer. He attended to her misunderstanding. Many a time I think I could see her. She comes in before Eli with a little boy.
I would have to admit, mind you, if I had been there, there would likely been enough of the flesh about me to have said, now listen, Mr. Lemos, I have one or two things I want to say to you. But Hannah didn't do it. Oh, no. What did she do?
She just simply said, for this I pray.
Wonder how Eli felt.
I'm sure he felt a shame.
I blamed her. I did indeed.
And she was right and I was wrong. God attended to her misunderstanding. But again, quickly, I want you to notice that she was a woman who made it a covenant with God.
She said to God, if you give me a man child, I will give him to you. In fact, she said, now, if you give to me, I'll give. But if you don't give to me, I can't. She made a covenant with God. Sometimes we are told that New Testament saints are on a higher plane and perhaps nearer to God than Old Testament. Now there may be a sense dispensation in which that's all right. But mind you, I have come to this conclusion as I have studied just a little bit of some of the Old Testament characters. They were people that were near to God. And they were people who had an intimacy with God. For instance, I was saying something at the conference about Jacob. You remember he made, if you like, a bargain with God. You do this for me, and since you do that, I give a tenth. And how would you have me here like that? He draws near, and in the presence of the God of heaven, she made a vow. Allow me to use a personal little experience to illustrate it. I was preaching on this continent, not in this country, quite a number of years ago, and God was saving a number of people. There was a woman attending the meetings, the only one of her family that wasn't saved. And I know that gospel preachers would understand me when I say I got a peculiar burden about that woman. I prayed for her through the night and through the day. And she wasn't saved. And she would talk at times. She wasn't saved. One day I was praying, and I never heard of this in my life. Never thought of doing it. But while I was praying, something suggested itself to me like this. You've got a little bit of extra money. Make a vow with God. If he saves that woman, what you'll do? And I did. And I got peace of mind, and I got up and went about the duty. But I wasn't long doing that until the verse came to me with freshness and power. Delay not to offer thy first fruit. I thought, I'm in difficulties now. I promised God what I'd do, and she's not saved. Anyhow, I said, I'll put God to the test. And I sat down and I wrote three letters and sent a letter to three laboring brothers. Now, not that night, but the next night, that dear woman going out of the meeting said, I've got saved. Now, just a minute now. The next night, going out of the meeting, she put an envelope in my hat. I said, you don't need to do it. She said, I know I don't, but I want to do it. I'm so thankful to be saved. And do you know, in that envelope, to the very cent, I sent away to those three laboring brothers. And you know, it encouraged me. It cheered my heart. I thought we could maybe get a little nearer to God. Get hold of God. Do a little business with God. Am I speaking to somebody tonight
Your family's not safe. Your partner in life not safe. All the difficulties that seem almost insurmountable. Does it ever occur to you that you could do a little business with God? It may not be money. It might be something else. Hannah made a covenant with God. I really feel to stay there. But I leave. The woman who suffered adversity. The woman who had to take second step. A woman who was given to prayer. A woman who was misunderstood. A woman who made a covenant with God. Now thank you. I want you to notice a woman that was remembered by God. I think those are lovely words. The Lord remembered her. Indeed, the subject of God remembering his people is in itself a very interesting one. Noah is shut in the ark and the floods all around and the storm is raging. But it says God remembered Noah and set about on dry ground. Mind you, there are many of God's dear people in their city. Not only physically, but they can see no way out any other way. The storms blow relentlessly about their heads. And maybe we forget them. Nice for them to remember. God remembered. God remembered Abram. In that doomed city he had those that he loved. He drew near and he stood yet before the Lord. He poured into the ear of God the name of Lot and his loved one. He continued there. Nice to notice, isn't it? God remembered him. And he sent Lot out of the midst of the open. You could pursue it if you want. I don't. It says he remembered. Her tears are dried. Her positions attended to. Her prayers are answered. Her misunderstandings all done away with. And her vow accepted and answered. But as I finish, not only do I notice that Hannah was remembered by God, but Hannah remembered God. You know, some of us are given to pray when we're in difficulty. And then maybe God answers. And we quite easily and quickly forget. But not Hannah. And I see Hannah, first of all, a praying woman. And now, I see Hannah, a paying woman. See her with a bottle. See her with a beast. See her with this that she's taking up. Where are you going, Hannah? Going up to the Lord. What are you going to do with these? I'm going to give them to the God that answered my prayer. I see her a paying woman. And then I see her a praising woman. Now as I stop, could I appeal to you, sisters? Some of you are quite young. Some, if you'll allow me to say it, not just so young. Does it ever occur to you that one single woman changed the course of the nation by her prayer and was a means in the hand of God of bringing the nation back a good day? You ever think that your prayers could rejuvenate the assembly? Do you ever think that your prayers could bring revival into the gospel work? I hope the sisters will all try to take a leaf out of Hannah's book. And please, you dear brother, you try and do the same. For God is still a king. He loves his people.
loves to hear their prayer.
It's in his heart to feed them, to lift them up, and to bless them. May God grant that our meeting may be conducive to that end.